Welcome to Health Yeah, where experts from Stony Brook Medicine come together to discuss topics ranging from the complex inner workings of an infectious disease to tips and tricks for staying safe and healthy all year long.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Health Yeah. My name is Dr. Anthony Anselm, and I am the Director of Child and Adolescent Outpatient Behavioral Health at Stony Brook Medicine. I am joined here today by my colleague, Dr. Sarup Gupta, and good friend to Stony Brook, Dr. Brian Zahn. I'm going to kick things off by asking each of you to introduce yourselves to our viewers and listeners. Dr. Gupta, let's start with you.
Well, thank you so much, Anthony, for having me here today. This is great. My name is Dr. Sarup Gupta. I'm a child and adolescent psychiatrist by training, and I'm assistant professor of clinical psychiatry here at Stony Brook Medicine. I deeply care about the issues that we're going to be talking today in our conversation, so I look forward to that.
Thank you. And Dr. Zahn, welcome.
Hi, Dr. Brian Zahn. I am assistant superintendent for curriculum instruction from the Southampton Union Free School District. Prior to this appointment that I'm just recently stepped into, I served as 13 years as high school principal in Southampton High School, so certainly right on the front lines of the issue that we will be discussing today, and looking forward to our conversation.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us. So as we sadly reach the waning weeks of the summer months, we have students, educators, and parents preparing for the new upcoming academic year. But this year is going to be a little bit different because we have the passing of Governor Hochul's bell-to-bell policy. So for those that aren't aware, this bell-to-bell policy bans cell phone use throughout the entire school day, not just within the classrooms, but throughout the whole entire school day. The policy also allows schools their own agency to create a plan to effectively police this policy. Students are allowed to have stripped down cell phones that do involve just calling and texting. But as well, it also allows parents the ability to contact their children to be in communication with them. It is across from elementary school, middle school, high school, across public schools, charter schools, and BOCES schools. And really, the spirit of the plan is to help children be more connected with their work, connected with their teachers, connected with their peers. So with that being said, my first question to you, Dr. Zahn, exactly how excited are your students for this bill? And I guess a follow-up to that, what are parents saying as well?
Well, having the opportunity to speak to some of our students over the summer, I can tell you they are not too happy about the cell phone ban.
Shocker.
Right. So certainly something. And from our former grads that just graduated, the class of 2025, I think there's a sense of relief from them in terms of not having to experience the ban. In speaking with parents, I've really heard both sides of the issue. I have parents that are very excited because of the ban, because they understand and they see the issues impacting their children. But on the other side of the issue, parents are very anxious about the inability to be able to communicate and connect with their children, especially in the events of an event of an emergency or where something is happening. So it's been interesting.
Yeah, and I know I've had the pleasure of meeting with your faculty, and I know that some of the students have even had this mixture of, I know I'm on my phone too much, but how dare you take it away from me? So there's that little give and go. Would you say that that's something that you've heard from students as well?
Absolutely. We have heard that. Actually, last year, one of our classroom teachers participated in her own little mini pilot where she had two classes. In one of her classes, she implemented her own cell phone ban in the classroom, whereas the other class just maintained our current code of conduct policies. One thing that she heard from the group that was minus phones is that the students felt that they were able to engage in the lessons much more. They were much more focused. The teacher reported higher performance rates in the classroom, and the students themselves self-reported that they felt much more higher engagement levels. They felt better about their learning, and they also felt more connection to their fellow classmates there. So for this little sample, I think it's pretty positive, and students were pretty self-aware of the issue.
Wow. Well, yeah. Getting students to begrudgingly say, you were right.
Right.
Kudos to your faculty. So Dr. Gupta, I'll send it over to you. So we have what I like to think is like alien futuristic technology in the palm of our hands that delivers low quality information at alarmingly fast speeds to developing brains. What could go wrong with that? So give me an idea with your work, with your patients, with your families. What are you seeing with cell phone use and how it's impacting children?
Well, thank you, Anthony, for that question. Yes, I can tell you from my clinical work that I do with my families every day in my clinic, and also a little bit of a research experience that I have acquired researching this issue over the past some time. Yes, this is an issue that comes up all the time in the clinic. I would not be wrong in saying that at least 7 or 8 out of 10 families that come to my clinic, they have a question, or they have at least felt that this is something they really want to get a better handle on, that this regularly interferes with some of the daily tasks or the goals they have for themselves, and especially for the kids. If you think beyond that, one thing that I tell my colleagues and my families is that, hey, this is an issue we really want to, you know, get a better handle on as we progress. This is certainly a question of, you know, public attention, in some sense of public health of our generation. We know that the cell phone that we have in our hands, it is more powerful than the machine that sent men to the moon. So that this is really powerful tool. And of course, if we do not have a good sense or develop good understanding of the guidelines, that how are we gonna develop a healthy relationship with this strong tool that we have, we are going to have challenges. We know from the evolutionary biology that how human mind works, right? We know one of the ways of thinking about our brain function is that this two system theory, that we know that there's one part of the brain which is more instinctual, habitually driven, other one is more conscious, more purposefully driven. We know that some of the technologies behind these powerful machines, they by design target the habitual part of the brain. And there's a lot of research to support that that's where people struggle. Lots of the problem behaviors, or the problematic screen use, as we call it, is falling in that domain. I can go on and on talk about it, but all of that to say that neurobiologically speaking, psychologically speaking, socially speaking, it is a very complex behavior. We got to understand it that way. And we are the one who are the vanguards of driving that that force and leading the charge of making it useful for our young kids.
Yeah, and it's very difficult because I always like to say that technology moves at a pace faster than we can actually understand it. So it usually takes us about 5 years to figure it out. So when we're done with this talk, we'll be coming back in 6 months talking about ChatGPT and how that's going to consist of AI. So the game is constantly changing. And I always like to say, too, that kids are a lot better at understanding technology than us. But then there's this emotional immaturity against the backdrop of risk-taking behaviors. So that's just a very combustible combination. So, I've had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Azan's faculty. They're amazing. Can they keep up with the TikTok influencers? Are they going to? Is algebra ever going to be as exciting as a TikTok reel? All due respect, I think that's a hard game to drive home. So to be able to be on top of it, I love what you're saying about that evolutionary piece, that, you know, there's so many threats to our attention, that I like to note that it's a great phrase that in 2025, we never have to be bored. And because of that, our thresholds of boredom is razor thin. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm going to switch it over to you, Dr. Zahn. Going with that, what have your colleagues seen, especially the old vanguard of the school? What have they seen over, say, the past 15 years?
Sure.
Have they noticed anything anecdotally?
Sure, no. And I could speak for myself and just saying, as a high school principal for 13 years in Southampton, there were major shifts and major changes that we've seen in just student behavior. I think one of the biggest pieces that we've seen is really much shorter attention spans for our kids. I think that struggle resonates with our teachers in the classroom. I often speak to teachers about the frustrations of really trying to keep our students engaged and motivated, especially when they're competing against the phones in classrooms. Teachers also found that they've had to really shift their instructional deliveries and strategies because of the shorter attention spans and because of this TikTok culture that we live in. Some of the other pieces that we've experienced over the years, we've seen an increase in cyberbullying taking place. We've seen less person-to-person interaction, especially in our cafeterias and much more of our social areas. And then the other piece, which is very alarming, is that we saw a decrease in our student participation in many of our traditional and classic events, such as we talk about our homecoming events, we talk about our dances, we talk about all of these great social experiences that were part of the high school experience. And unfortunately, we've seen a decrease in that participation and many students reporting because of some of the issues with the phone use, particularly when you're seeing boys that are playing on their video games, girls that are using social media in other ways. But it has been quite a challenge, and we've seen major shifts in student performance, student behaviors over these years.
Wow. I mean, you know, it's hard to have this conversation without the back in the day approach.
Right.
I think even within colleges, and I know I've spoken with people at Stony Brook, where, you know, long gone are the days where you threw a Frisbee in the quad and had a hacky sack. So maybe we'll do that after this conversation. but to see that lack of engagement, that it's such a juxtaposition that we have this technology that can bring us together, but it's on such a surface level, but it doesn't really have that meaningful engagement with students, within peers and within teachers and students. So, Dr. Gupta, one of the hallmarks of good therapy is the generalization of skills outside of the therapy session.
Right.
So we have Dr. Zahn, who's working within Southampton to make sure that within school, cell phone use is contained, that it's healthy usage. But what good is that if students are going home and they're going right back on Roblox, or going right back on Instagram, and they're spending excessive time there? So what would you propose to help make sure that these gains within the school are also carried over within the home?
No, absolutely. That's a great question, Anthony. And when I think about this problem in my clinic, and we work together on some of these clinical problems together, that I think it's at this point, we got to think about it as a two-pronged approach. One, we want to think about what we can do in short term, here and now, since now we are almost in the middle of some of this problematic, you know, usage that we talk about. So we got to do something more cross-sectionally, something like what schools are trying to do. How do we make sure that we have a consistency, the same ideas, same approach in the homes, that the family are on board, and they implement the similar, you know, they reinforce the similar ideas at home, so that it's it gets more generalized. Some of the tools that we could use, interestingly, we use technology to that end. So it's not all bad, right? We got to think about things more holistically in the middle path. There are several family media plan templates that are available out there. I use them frequently in my clinic when I work with my families and suggest that, hey, this is what something you could sit down together, work it as a collaborative rather than a one-side unilateral approach that I know what's the problem, I have the solution as a parent, just go and implement it, right? Sit down, work with your kids, have an understanding, what are the needs that they're getting met with the use of their this technology or their smartphones, and develop a solution customized way that works for your family. The second thing that I would say, that as we move forward to deal with this problem more comprehensively, I not only see this as a to an extent a clinical problem, but I also see it as an educational problem. Think about it like this. If we decide that we're going to rely only on the ban as the only way to solve this problem, I think we should also start thinking that, can we use this opportunity to develop a curriculum that addresses this challenge? Like, think about like a health curriculum that we have in this school. We don't go and say, don't talk about some of these health problems, like in the adolescent age group. We don't say that, don't talk about HIV infection or sexually transmitted diseases. We said, no, it's our responsibility to teach our kids the skills and the tools that they need to understand the problem and be a problem solver or think about it wisely. I was actually at a research conference in Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks ago. There is research actually to show that the kids who we think so-called educational videos that they're watching in their pre-verbal times, that their language acquisition is actually poorer in comparison to when somebody, a human person, sitting down with the child and reading a story to them versus they are hearing the same story in so-called engaging and entertaining way from a screen. So we got to start at that level, understand that what are the skills needed. Parents need to understand what are the skills they need to develop in order for it to be a successful enterprise. And of course, it falls from there.
I love what you said, especially about the family media plan. And for those that don't know, this was espoused by the past U.S. Surgeon General. That has a really comprehensive guide of every aspect you can think about, when to use it, where to use it, keeping phones out of the bedroom, how much is problematic. And I love what you're saying, making it more of a collaborative approach, because one thing that we know that kids don't like, it's because I said so. And the other flip side of this, of being able to engage people to start early education. So I'm going to put you on the spot, Dr. Zahn. What would you think from kindergarten up until college and college through, what do you think are some of the things, the more practical things that we can do to implement this into school so the messages get rehearsed?
Well, I have to say, Dr. Gupta, just listening to what you said in the piece of research on how kids are learning is very interesting, because in the educational field and in the industry, we're seeing more and more educational materials pushed out in digital format. And many schools, of course, are falling to that, number one, because it's much more cost efficient. That's one piece. And the access piece is another one. But when you look at the research that says it's not nearly as effective, I find that fascinating. So I'm certainly going to bring that back to our school for it.
And I think we actually had a moment where I spoke to your faculty and I said, oh, reading on a screen is not as effective as reading in a book, which prompted the response of, but we just took the SATs and they all took it on a screen. Where I almost ran out because of the tension in the room. So I think, yeah, it's under educating students on that level.
Right.
But again, I turned it to you. And
yeah, so very interesting. We have a couple of plans for that, because we truly believe that a ban is not going to solve the problem as well. Just look what we did when we had zero tolerance policies in terms of suspensions, drug use, and everything else. All these... it was very problematic. It didn't yield the results that we were hoping for. So we firmly believe that their education is key here. So we're putting a lot of emphasis on digital citizenship, which is how to effectively use these devices with our students. Particularly that's for our students. So we're finding opportunities and ways in our schools, whether it's through advisory models and your non-traditional core classroom setups, where kids can go in and have these conversations, learn these quote unquote soft skills outside of an algebra, math class, or an English class. So that's something where schools are looking at structures. We in Southampton are doing that. So the education piece is key. That is a major piece of our plan. On the second piece, it's really talking to parents about healthy ways at an early age. Education is all about the earlier that you intervene, the more effective that those interventions are going to be. So really speaking with parents of resisting the urge of using the phones as babysitters is a big one. Me as a parent myself, I know I could say I was probably guilty of that myself. But in hindsight, I think it caused bigger problems in the long run that parents never really anticipated. So it's that early intervention education with parents. And we're doing that through parent universities, parent institutes, and also these educational platforms, just as we're doing right now, is one piece. And then for the student piece, it's really talking about that digital citizenship through different means and non-traditional means of delivery.
Yeah, what's the saying, hard choices now for easy choices later.
Correct.
That we're able to be more proactive and make sure that our students have something to deal with that boredom, or to be able to contend with boredom, which is going to be such a valuable resource And trait for them as they grow older.
Sure.
That's important. I know in my household, we had the parody book, If You Give a Mouse an iPad, and my kids still will quote that about, you know, that the little mouse that's missing everything in life because, I'll send it to you, Dr. Gupta. Yeah. So even starting young with that and not making it one of these week-long no cell phone bans, we know those aren't effective, having that week-long, but also having the government and having other people pitch in. I know in other countries they'll have more public campaigns to advocate this, identifying students that may be at risk or engaging in risk, which isn't to say all of them, but to get those students that may be using it in a harmful way. So I love this idea of just this, it takes a village approach to make sure that the parents are on board, they're getting education. I like to say sunlight is the best disinfectant. So the more we can provide education on different levels. So it starts off with if you give a mouse a cookie or if you give a mouse an iPad, and maybe it ends with understanding algorithms and how it's targeting to you, because we're all guilty. You know, Facebook knows I'm a middle-aged guy. It knows what it likes seeing. So then it's also trying to figure out how to work with kids to outsource that willpower. Because again, it's hard for a lot of us to say no. But if you've got this developing brain that's being fed this algorithm, sometimes we have to outsource our willpower. So to be able to provide them ways to do that so kids can be kids. And that's the whole point of this bell-to-bell policy.
If I may just say one thing about the SAT example, this is exactly the point that, yes, you can administer a test like SAT on a digital format, and it takes out that subjective variability and all those environmental factors that may affect your performance. That's great. So that's a good use of it. That does not equate that I'm going to learn in the similar fashion to prepare for that test. So it has to be a combination of things, and knowing where the technology is used for, and it's not omnipotent to solve all the problems that we have, but use it judiciously. One of the things that when I think about the digital citizenship, and we talked about it I was at the International Congress a couple of weeks ago, that, hey, this is the opportunity for the kids to help them appreciate, educate them what they're up against. For that matter, all of us think about that. All, by the way, all of these research companies who have the social media and whatnot, their research departments combined are bigger than any research departments that we could ever have. They do tons of research. They know so much more about human cognition and how we work, the persuasive communication, the algorithms that design the engagement, and all the factors that we know, how we engage the human mind. They know all of that. And yes, from the business point of view, they are going to design, and rightfully so, to maximize the output.
Sure.
That makes sense. But our job here is to make sure, as the educators, as the public health folks in the community, to make sure that it stays within the healthy bounds. There is I think it's not that we are at cross with each other. I think there is a space for both the ideas and the groups to coexist and develop in a healthy way. I don't think necessarily, when I think about this problem, when we have had the conversation that, hey, there is a maleficent intent here by purpose. No, I think if I'm designing a tool for myself to serve a certain need, the tool is going to serve that purpose. But there got to be somebody on the other side of the equation say, no, I want to make sure that tool continues to do what it's best to do without having the harmful effects.
Sure.
We know from the human functioning, mind functioning, that it is the boredom, it is the inertia. Those are the fundamental habitual mental states where people are most likely to use their smartphones or these electronic devices in the most unhelpful way. These problems have existed forever. People have tried using different ideas to address those mental states. This tool is so much easier, least cognitive effort, that it addresses that problem. That's how we want to think about it.
No, and I think you make a fantastic point, because we as educators know the power of some of the platforms that we use on the screen and how useful they can be. And I think we're trying to find as educators that healthy balance as well. And I think all of us kind of fell into, I think we leaned a little bit too heavy, and especially when you look back at the pandemic, I think that was a major piece of that. We really turned education upside down and in fact, really made everything digitalized at that point. So now I think we're really focused on trying to find that healthy balance because we know the impact that digital platforms can have, but also we're seeing the effects on our students in terms of our cyberbullying, major mental health spikes, and everything else that's associated with it.
Yeah, it's such a issue of good servant, bad master when we look at technology, that if we harness it the right way, and I always like to say with students' input, because they know it better than we do, right? So they're not the head of the table, but they need to have a seat at the table, that it could be something very transformative for education, for a lot of learners that are more visually based, to be able to harness technology to help them out, to be able to have AI listening, to be able to have students that maybe have executive functioning problems and notes being taken for them so they can help out, help with their test scores. That can be a beautiful thing. So it's just how much we're having these ongoing conversations. I also have to know, Dr. Zahn, how much are you preparing for it? Are there already tunnels being dug where there's cell phones being put? What does it look like?
No, we are actively preparing for this because we anticipate that there are going to be some challenges with this. We especially when you look at your upperclassmen in every school, it's not so much our, let's say, our freshmen, our ninth graders that are new to the high school. They're going to come in and they're going to naturally abide by the new school rules. But when you take your rising juniors, seniors, even 10th graders, and you apply that even to the middle school, those are the students that I think have been already conditioned in a way, and that we have to now go back and reset some norms for them. So we do anticipate that there are going to be challenges. We anticipate that there's going to be an increase of students in the hallways during class time because of that short attention span. So we anticipate that we're going to see many more bathroom passes being issued to get out of the classroom. We do know that teachers are going to have a little bit of a challenge with engagement levels in the classroom. We do know that. And we do see from our students are self-reporting like as a running joke, but seriously, Dr. Zahn, you're going to see some students withdrawing these first couple of months. And in a way, there is truth to that. So we are encouraging our teachers really just to give our students some grace during this period because it really will be a major change of our practices within the building. So it will be easy. I think on the parent end, how we're preparing is that we want to make sure that we are over-communicating with parents because of the anxieties that parents have of not being able to connect with their children. We're giving alternate and making sure that parents know alternate ways to do that, whether it's contacting the main offices and we can connect. We've also allowed students to have email access that they haven't had traditionally in the past with parents. So that's a means, but it's not as quick as your texting. And this is done on our own approved devices. Again, I think that's something that gives a little bit of relief for parents as well. And again, it just comes down to that education. We are anticipating in terms of student behaviors, you know, we've seen some creative things that students have done. When we visited another school that actually piloted this this type of model last year, some of the things that they were reporting were they had many students coming in with burner phones. And when students were placing their devices into their Yonder packet pouches, which is what this one school used, there was an uptick of students coming in with two phones, one being a burner phone. So we are anticipating things that we never thought that we would be dealing with in schools, but we're really trying to listen. And it's funny because the students are the ones that are really, if you listen to the students, you're going to know what we're going to be facing.
Absolutely.
That's great. So it's going to be like a big scavenger hunt in Southampton.
Exactly.
But it'll be interesting because, you know, a lot of with my work, the typical scenario is I'll be working with a student that will be doing an essay that's either low value or maybe very difficult. It's so easy to go on the phone and to relieve that tension. But then every time you go to that phone, as Dr. Gupta was talking about, re-engaging with that work becomes more and more difficult. So I'm really just curious to see how students contend with that either low value, perceived low value, or that difficult work,
right?
Because it's so easy to alleviate that sense of tension, and that's not always a good thing. So sometimes it's okay to sit with that tension, because once you get through it, you can get into that flow state. So I'd be very curious to see how the students respond to this overall. You know, and in terms of what you're hoping to see, let me start off with this one. What happens to the student that sees the teacher on their phone? Have you thought?
Absolutely. And I think
do as I say, not as I do, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And I think we as educators have to model those expectations for our students. Now, the New York State law is a student cell phone ban, but we have to be very much aware as educators, we are modeling for our students. So there should be at no time do we want to see our educators in classrooms picking up their phones and showing their phones. Now, clearly, our educators will need them on off periods and other times. But I think if we are modeling these behaviors for our students, and students are not just seeing that this is imposed on them, but we're all part of this, and we all understand, we all are experiencing these issues, and we're going to be solving them together, students will then even more fall in line with kind of some of the practices that we are you know, striving for.
All right. So we're going to finish up here. Last final question for both of you gentlemen. I want you to finish this sentence. By the end of the school year, students in New York State will be, fill in the blank.
Students in New York State will be performing at higher levels. Students in New York State will be less likely to be engaged in social media bullying. Students in New York State will have much healthier mental health, a mental health state going on. And students in New York State will be able to much more effectively communicate, orally communicate, and collaborate with one another, which is a skill that's needed for the 21st century workforce and learning.
All right. And Dr. Gupta?
For me, what I'm hoping that this initiative will do for us, of course, apart from improved educational achievements, as Dr. Zahn talked about, I'm also hoping that there would be a trickle-down benefit for me in my clinic, where when I see my families and the kids, that they have a better appreciation of this factor that plays into their mental health, and I can talk to them. Because sometimes what happens when I talk to them, they really look at me and say, how is that related to what I'm experiencing in my mental health? So I'm hoping that there will be some spin-off improvements in the mental health.
Great. Let's see. Let's hope we'll have to check back in a year and see if that happens. So that's all the time that we have today. Thank you to our experts for being a part of this conversation, and thank you to our viewers and listeners for tuning in.
Stony Brook Medicine is Long Island's premier academic medical center. We transform lives through scientific discovery, education, and care. And we bring together innovative research, advanced education, and extraordinary healthcare expertise to set the standard for how healthy communities thrive. For more information, visit stonybrookmedicine.edu or follow us on social media, Stony Brook Medicine on Instagram, Threads, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn, and Stony Brook Med on X.